This is broadcast number 655. It's June 25th, 1984. I'm going to skip the subjects that I had last year because it's hard to remember yesterday or a week ago. The news is going by so quickly. Briefly, it was about the Posse Comitatus, the far right wing, the people in Kansas City that were surfacing, and in California, their links to Nazi Germany and also to the Philippines, to Charles Willoughby, who was head of intelligence for General Douglas MacArthur. And I was continuing the links of the Los Angeles Police Department to Larry McDonald. That was 1 year ago tonight. And as I say, the world spins very, very quickly. I was outraged at another speech that that George Shultz gave yesterday. I'm really mad. It's going to sort of like the movie Network, the story of Paddy Chayefsky. You know, I'm not going to take it anymore. This is the effort of George Shultz to have permission to murder leaders around the world to his own liking. The paper had a story this morning, preemptive measures, Shultz asks the anti-terrorist action. And in essence, what he says is that the experience has taught us over the years that one of the best deterrents to terrorism is the certainty that swift and sure measures will be taken against those who engage in it. Now, he is going to define terrorism, George Shultz. He expressed anger. What he said was the insidious claim that one man's terrorist is another man's fighter. This reminds me of the song License to Kill, the latest album of Bob Dylan. I wrote down some of the words before I came here, but I'm going to take the whole thing and get it for you and read it to you. It's a song about how certain people have the right or think they have the right to run your lives and have that license to kill. This isn't a new thing which he just discovered, George Shultz. As a matter of fact, another front page story in the Monterey Herald says Shultz calls for new approach. This team has used that method since the Versailles Treaty when World War I was over, killing thousands of people in Germany, 10 or 20,000. All the politicians, professors, opponents to Adolf Hitler and the Third Reich and the Nazi Party. Experience has taught us, he says, over the years. Sure it did. John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, Adlai Stevenson, John Lennon, Medgar Evers, Che Guevara, you name it. Death squads. These people have had the license to kill. What they're saying now, the Reagan administration is saying, give us the legal permission to kill people who are congregating in groups of 5 or 10. What was the SLA? 10 people? 6 were cremated alive on the television from the LA Police Department SWAT teams. That's why my article, The SLA is a CIA 10 years ago, is so important. Book-length article. This was the beginning of the license to kill and barbecue you on the evening television and sell you the whole script. And then Patty Hearst and the Harrises go off in the yonder and sail away and come back and are all living happily ever after. It isn't a new approach, which is what the wire services said today. And experience has taught him indeed. And all they need now is to decide who are terrorists or who are housing terrorists. They cite Libya and Syria and Iran and North Korea. Who armed Libya? Who sent the money over there to Gaddafi? Edwin Wilson and Frank Turpel and the Task Force 157 and the Central Intelligence Agency, Carlos and all of them. Who armed Iran and sent the weapons to the Shah and the Savak and still arms Iran, even with Khomeini there? And I'll do a little bit more on that in a little while. Read the story of Syria and how the CIA formed this government in Syria with Nazis, and our intelligence system formed this government. Where did terrorism come from? We put them in the bag of being terrorists so we could control the world. That was the shtick. Create the terrorism, let them be called terrorists, and then we will crack down on everybody and you'll have your pass cards and your concentration camps. It is outrageous what they want to make legal, just like last week Reagan got through the Congress that you can send troops down to Central America, El Salvador and Nicaragua. You don't need covert action anymore. The Congress says you can send troops. So that makes it legal. They learned from the last war, I suppose, that if Adolf Hitler had permission to go into Poland and Czechoslovakia and Austria and so forth, it would have been legal. Well, this is what the government wants now, the license to kill under the excuse of terrorism. It's enough to make you vomit or at least be angry. There were several articles quickly to mention that I call the unmitigated nerve of the world. One was Henry Kissinger warning about debt problems in South America and provoking political confrontation. Who in the world does Henry Kissinger think he is? And many of you know what I think of him as the number one Nazi spy in this country. He's on the board of Chase Manhattan. His wife is a full-paid employee of Chase Manhattan. They messed over all of Central America, the Rockefellers and the United Fruit people and the whole gang, and he's paid by them. And who gave the loans down there? Who brought us to the crisis? Who gave the Argentine military junta, the Nazis, for 30 years running Argentina, Chase Manhattan and all their buddies, and the Continental Illinois, the Vatican Bank, the center of Vatican financing in the United States going under, and our loans everywhere from coast to coast, the Bank of America back to the East Coast to Chase Manhattan. What a nerve for him warning on debt when he draws salary on the board of these people, and he and his friend Fritz Kramer and Alexander Haig and Vernon Walter, they brought those debts. They'll break the backs of the Americans with the debts, and he's giving a warning. That is a lot of nerve. And the next batch of nerve goes to the Pope. He goes to Switzerland, and many of you saw it. He exhorts the Swiss on banking ethics. What do you think of that unmitigated nerve? Telling them that the world of finance is a world of human beings. Our world, he said, is subject to the conscience of all of us. Ethical principles apply too. What's he talking about? Roberta Calvi, their buddy, hanging off a bridge in London, the secretary flying out of a window in Milan. 20 or 30 deaths related between the death of Pope Paul I and Pope Paul II. And money tangled billions of dollars, over $3 billion, down in Central America, Panama banks, Bahamas, dummy fronts. You go down there, there's a doorknob. There's no people, no accountability, going to dictatorships in countries that are doing genocide on Indians, native populations, Uruguay, Paraguay, Brazil, killing off the native populations, death squads in Chile and Argentina. And didn't the Swiss banks bail out the Vatican banks? In fact, one article said that it's ironic that the Pope says this when the Vatican just assumed $250 million, which is a fraction of their losses, that involved international banks, including the Swiss banks that got burned by the Vatican. And some Swiss banks are bailing out the Vatican Bank. How do they have the nerve, these people, to get up and get the attention of the news media without the news media saying, all right, we've had enough? The Pope also said in Switzerland he warned against rising materialism. Well, now that they're getting poor and their money's tied up and linked to the mafia and the death squads, materialism's a little hard to come by. But if you read between the lines, he's spending $50 million for his trip to Canada for 10 days. Is that materialism? Why not put that towards the debt before you go traveling? I'm really getting angry. I sound like Saturday Night Live when they do the news and have an interview, but enough is enough already with this hypocrisy and the silence of our NBC, ABC, CBS with the kind of stuff they're throwing out and getting away with. Many of you might have read about the two people who were arrested around the home of George Bush this last week, two men carrying a gun, a rifle, a cartridge pistol, rather, a quantity of money. One is 21 years old and the other is 19. They don't speak much English, but they're from El Salvador. Ronald Reagan went over to give a happy birthday present to George Bush to spend an hour and a half. And out of the bushes at the naval compound where Bush happens to live appear these two El Salvadorians. Just coincidentally, the same week that Dopazon, or 2 weeks after Dopazon, was accused of having a plan to kill our ambassador over in El Salvador. Just a week after Casey admitted that the CIA secretly assisted the Salvador elections, and Dopazon was pushed aside, openly saying, just right after Senator Helms, Jesse Helms, leaked the fact that we were funding Dopazon, Duarte and not Dopazon, And then after they get the story of the assassination plot that's important enough to send Vernon Walters from the old death squad going way back years, after we get that story and he runs over there to appease Daubuisson and Duarte, Daubuisson's allowed into the United States. And here's two guys with a bag of money, described as a quantity of money, and a pistol around George Bush's house when Ronald Reagan's coming over with his little package that was wrapped up. They didn't say what was in the little box, but they brought him a birthday present. And the SWAT teams came, and the two El Salvadorians, who don't speak any English hardly, but were on the grounds, were taken away. Of course, this was all downplayed, like the Hinckley connections. What the Washington Times said, neither suspect displayed any direction or interest towards the president or vice president. Well, once they're picked up, what kind of interest would you display? It says it looks like they were just in the wrong place at the wrong time. Speak no English, El Salvador, bag of money to get away, and a gun that they confiscated. They just happened to be near the home located by the Naval Observatory in Northeast Washington. And during Reagan's stay, the sirens came, the SWAT team, and the two El Salvadorians were ushered out. I don't even know if the charges were pressed. I'm sure they weren't. But here's the old CIA master who has Mubarak at his home for dinner, and then Mubarak goes back to Egypt, and 2 days later, Sadat is offed. These people like George Bush and Henry Kissinger and George Shultz are very, very dangerous people to mess around and eat with or socialize with. George Shultz goes down to El Salvador on a quick trick after the elections and down to Nicaragua, and all of a sudden Mr. Pastor is shot, and he says the CIA was behind it. Well, that's a little episode about the Bush-Reagan birthday. It wasn't a dinner. It was just a little gift-sharing time. There's a new book out about Ronald Reagan. It's called The Secret Life of Ronald Reagan. It's published. You can order it in care of Hustler, P.O. Box 67800-5289, Los Angeles, 90067. It's $15, or look in your bookstore. Originally, when Don Fried was writing this book, I was going to do a section with him, and he was going to come up here, but I didn't like the terms of the agreement. It didn't strike me as right or fair. So I wrote him a letter telling him that. And then he went down to L.A. and finished the book. And he had given a sum of money to write this by some backers while he wrote the book on Ronald Reagan. And Don Fried is a good writer. When Larry Flint surfaced and was becoming political and anxious to get the rebel out, he paid Don Fried what the backers had given him to pay them back, so that he could publish the book with Don Fried. And Don was excited. And then after Larry went totally crazy and was taken to the federal pen, the Hustler owned the right because they had given Don this hunk of money. And so Don Fried was eased out, threatened with a lawsuit or eased out if it didn't come out by the Hustler publishing it. So it's Larry's name with Don. And I'm glad my name isn't on it. But you can get the book, and Don Fried is a good writer. It's The Secret Life of Ronald Reagan, and you can get that. Last week I was telling about the meat scandal, and I just wanted to update with two different items of that because they were in the news since we were on the air and shared information last week. One is from the Washington Post, greater meat inspection authority sought. And the pressure is on the USDA by Representative Tom Harkin of Iowa. That's the fellow running against Roger Jepson, who's been involved in the recent scandals. What he's saying is that particularly two companies, the King Packing Company from Denver, Colorado, and also another company out of Pennsylvania, the Weyandt, W-E-A-N-D-T and Sons, Wholesale Meat, have been involved in supplying animals that died from disease and cancer, other means than slaughter, that they're not supposed to do, and they're supplying the school lunch programs. Now, that is familiar with the dioxin and the school lunch programs that I talked and wrote about 10 years ago. The USDA went to look at their records of what they were giving the poor children in the lunch programs, and they destroyed the plant records. Whatever chemicals or cancers or what the animals died of is a secret. So whoever was the recipient of this great hamburger with a lot of ketchup on it to disguise the flavor, whatever it is, they destroyed the story of the animals. When the federal agents came in to inspect the meat, they didn't slaughter certain diseased and dying cattle until after the federal investigators, inspectors left the premises. And Senator Jesse Helms, of course, from North Carolina, chairman of the Senate Agriculture Committee, opposes any improvement on USDA. I don't know how some people can be fascist 100%, that they don't want anything good. I can see a difference of opinion of being strong as against being weak, so Russia respects strength. But how do people like Jesse Helms, who's fought the genocide treaty and all these various things, why is he so insistent that we're doing a good job and that you can get cancer for your school lunch program and diseased animals? But once again, there's Jesse Helms opposing a change. And also, since last week when I talked about meat, there's a book out. You may have heard the author on various talk shows, Orville Schell, S-C-H-E-L-L. It's called Modern Meat by Random House. And he tells the new feed, the modern meat that they put into beef and hog and the various animals that they now are being fed exotic feed, such as peanut skins, wood chips, sawdust, cardboard dust, shredded telephone books, newsprint, including the ink, which is dangerous. And he also talks about the estrogen and things that are put in the ears of the animals and the penicillin. He was on KGO saying that there's so many chemicals that the animals can't get diseases, but they transfer to humans. So when you get a disease, your resistance is already gone. If you've eaten enough of that, you can't tolerate you can tolerate these antibiotics, and they won't knock out what you have because they work for the thing that you're now eating. They also are feeding them cow and chicken manure. They dry sewage sludge, and they get high-protein fungi that grows on waste liquid that's discharged from paper mills, and they're getting chemicals from those products. As I say, it's dangerous to handle some of the ink products, but the cows are eating it. So the diet for the steers is 60% recycled manure with no detrimental impact that they notice right at the moment, but it gives marbling flavor, juiciness. It's tender. And one problem with the poultry manure is that if they stack it too high up, it catches fire by spontaneous combustion. But if they want to feed it to the animals, they spread it thin and it doesn't catch fire. 1 minute, just 1 minute on swill, because I was very, I don't know why, there was something about that animal. When you stop the Olympic Games where people get together and you interfere with certain beautiful animals or horses, there's no stopping this chemical warfare against animals. I remember when Jolly West, the psychiatrist who diagnosed the one-minute motor epilepsy of Jack Ruby after he shot Lee Harvey Oswald, Jolly West specialized in using poison dart guns that they didn't kill, but they tranquilized elephants in their track, and they would drop down. And the CIA has tested using these poison darts or darts on animals as well as people. Jolly West then went on to be head of the neuropsychiatric in Los Angeles at UCLA and worked with Ronald Reagan and Edwin Meese on the mind control. Just one large story in the New York Times, swale's mysterious death, foul play possible in collapse. The reason I'm interested is the chemical possibilities. Just like Frank Turpel said, you walk down an airplane aisle and you put your finger on a particular person and touch his coat, and it will seep into his bloodstream and he'll arrive at a place and drop dead. And so I think it's important to think if they're testing these particular animals and potential winners who are worth millions of dollars. The New York Times has a story, June 10th, the Belmont horse that might have been. Now, this is the story of an Argentine trainer who has raced horses and trained in Argentine for 30 years. His name is Angel Pena, and it tells how he has a horse he's working up. Time for a Change is the name of the horse, and they wanted to run him down in Belmont, but he was sick. And that in Florida, there were 300 thoroughbreds in Florida in 1 month that got a virus. You know, 10 days after the flamingo, 300 horses were down. I don't remember. I don't read all the sports section, but I don't remember. But this story is about Penna from Argentina, who's very bitter that his horse didn't get into the Belmont. He was sitting on the sideline and didn't have a chance to win. But the day the race was over, he had an interview, and he talked about how Swale, quote, was a good horse, He was not a great horse, using the past tense. 2 days later, Swale was dead. And then the article goes on to say that Time for a Change will surely win in July, that he was put on hold because he had been sick, that something was wrong with Devil's Bag, but he will be swinging along, and in July he'll be running races. And then the story says that Panna won't be lonely anymore, that he was left out and dejected because his horse wasn't running, how bitter he was. So the trainer from Argentina will have Time for a Change. I've never told you how to bet on a horse on this program, but I am going to ask some friends who know how to bet. In July, I'm going to bet on Time for a Change, and I think I know that he's going to win that horse in July. I'll bet you anything he does. Now, to update the story of Edwin Meese and Ronald Reagan's behavior, and I'm going to the Korean Airline Part 2 if I have time, but there were some stories that were very important to update right now. One is the Sin Fuel story on broadcast number 648. That's May the 7th. I did a lot on most of the broadcasts on the Sin Fuel scandal, how the organization, the agency, should be forced to be exposed. The chief, they suggested, should resign because of his scandals. How the Sin Fuel budget gave $629 million to Dow Chemical. The large salaries for these people, the violations they had. The head of the Sin Fuel at the time was involved with $20 million missing from a bank in Oklahoma. There was favoritism in certain loans with a gentleman from Texas. And then the prober, the head of the committee looking into Sin Fuel's, Thomas Doherty, all of a sudden was dead. He was head of the Oversight and Investigation Subcommittee and died. And the Sin Fuel scandal has been going on and on. There's seven men on the board, and five have been removed, so it can hardly function. And I went into the background of Mr. Noble. It's spelled M-O-B-L-E, not the Noble Dynamite people, the from Europe, N-O-B-E-L, the George de Morenschild, Oswald's mentor, his father worked for, and de Morenschild. There was the Nobel and Noble, but the background looked very similar. And I wondered where this family who fund the Heritage Foundation, the Edwin Meese Foundation, the Institute for Contemporary Studies, the Committee on Present Danger, who sets up agricultural and cancer research. I wondered about this man who funds the Hoover Institute, where the money came from of the Nobles, because there isn't anything that I could find in Who's Who or Standard & Poor's and the various biographies on where the money originally came from. And I first read about them in that book, Reagan's Ruling Class, page 216 on Edward Noble. Well, this past week, there was a full-page picture, June the 17th, and I mean full-page. The articles aren't teeny anymore. They're big pictures. Sin Fuel Chief Under Fire, Edward E. Nobel, waiting for the axe to fall. He doesn't look very sad, and it tells about his corporation that was given $19 billion by our congressman for nefarious, sleazy operations, unaccountable. And this article in the Washington Post goes into the problems of the Sin Fuel organization, conflicts of interest, and their work with the various gas companies, and they're giving the Dow Chemical these millions of dollars. And how Reagan very nicely said, I'll cut back $10 billion because they have so many billions and they're giving them away. One was a conflict up in North Dakota that Edwin Meese came in and said, you have to fund them. It seems to be an open-ended fund of people not accountable with backgrounds that are really very treacherous or could be. Synthetic fuels were the subject that I.G. Farben was involved with Adolf Hitler and slave labor at Auschwitz, the concentration camps. Interestingly enough, one of the attorneys for the Sin Fuel Company, according to the Washington Post, it's Edward F. Cox, President Nixon's son-in-law, who served as chief counsel for the Sin Fuel Corporation. No wonder Nixon's brought back into the family with these kind of contacts with Tricia and his son-in-law with the Sin Fuel. Well, Jack Anderson had a story this last Saturday that makes Sin Fuel a little more interesting, as if it wasn't enough before. And it's telling about the problems with the president's disenchantment and the money that's being spent, and how the president suggested $10 billion go out, and how they're giving out a lot of funds with strange contacts. But the strangest of all, and wouldn't you know it would come to this, Jack Anderson says, an outrageous example of Sin Fuel's operation is the proposed Scrubgrass Sin Fuel project near Pittsburgh. It is the ardent support of Representative William Clinger, Republican from Pennsylvania. We'll have to look into Clinger some more. In whose district it would be built? Even though the scrubgrass request for $500 million has been rejected four times by Congress, and two Sinn Féin officials flew to Pittsburgh to meet with the project sponsors to fill out more forms to finally get a raid on our treasury for this $500 million that would go to the project in Pittsburgh. Now, he goes on to say that the scrubgrass project, the director, the chief sponsor, is called AC Valley Corporation. They never had any experience in Sinn Féin synthetic fuels. They include a waitress, a minister, and a school teacher that want the $500 million. But behind the facade of the locally owned company, the AC Valley, with a few tangible assets, is the German name Krupp, K-R-U-P-P, Germany's munitions maker from Bismarck to Adolf Hitler, Krupp GKT, which will provide the gasification technology for scrubgrass. The Krupps have a big holding in Nevada. They had the land next to the ranch where Charles Manson lived. They owned, you know, territory in California and goodness knows where. But the Germans would supply the gasification technology. Is that the gasification of the extermination? You have a group here with billions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars. Behind it is Krupp AG, which will provide gasification technology for scrubgrass. It's a wholly owned subsidiary of Friedrich Krupp, GmbH, those initials of the German Krupp, which is 25% owned by Iran and the Ayatollah Khomeini. $500 million. And the gasification process that Hitler used would be brought to America, and we would put up the money, and the Krupps would be moving in to this country in a synthetic fuel project, which Hitler used. He didn't import oil during the war. He had his own synthetic fuel. So we're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars. And already they said they've wasted $15 billion through Congress. They've authorized gigantic boondoggle. But I knew there was a big story behind the Sinn Féin project. You can't get bigger than Krupp. And when the Krupp family, the head of the family, was in prison after the Nuremberg trials, it was John J. McCloy of Chase Manhattan who released the Krupps to begin their business. Hallmar Schacht, the banker for Hitler, Herman Apps, who's helping the Vatican Bank. And so Sinn Féin's, with their questionable background and with their country club existence, Jack Anderson says, most of the Sinn Féin executives had searched for a petroleum substitute at golf courses, sauna baths, and nightclubs around the world. So that's your Sinn Féin and your Krupps. To update another story I did on the General Services Administration, that's broadcast number 642 this last March, about Edwin Meese and the links of Mike Curb of California and the General Services Administration. I talked about Reagan's scandal because he had nominated David Cordomanche as campaign manager for Mike Curb in California to be head of the GSA, the General Services, which has itself a $6.6 billion budget a year, small to Sinn Féin, but plenty big. The Washington Post has a story that the confirmation hearings for Jack Cordomanche will be put off until after the elections. The Senate Governmental Affairs Committee scheduled the hearings for today. That was June 14th last week. But an aide said the investigation turned down the hearings because Cordomanche was involved in not illegal but impractical activities, that he was the target for political attacks. They want to clean up his nefarious selling his business, his bus company, at overstated prices and lying, and a multi-million-dollar lawsuit about him in California. Now, Senator Thomas Eagleton, who won't be in the Congress after the next elections, wants this held up until they separate the National Archives from the General Services Administration. But he's leaving Congress. Imagine if the archives were all the Kennedy materials locked up for 50 years or 70 years and you can't get your hands on and all this other important stuff. Imagine in the hands of Ronald Reagan and Jack Cordomanche. Eagleton wants to separate it after the elections. If Reagan's elected, Cordomanche will be in charge of your National Archives. We'll take a one-minute break now and You, if you're tape recording this, you can turn your tape over. And if you're not tape recording it, you can get ready for part two.